073094, U.S. versus Booker. Mr. Anderson.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, I'm Kent Anderson with the Federal Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois, representing the appellant Mark Booker. In this case, Mr. Booker pled guilty to being a felon in possession of a firearm after the district court erroneously denied his suppression motion based on the police officer's illegal stop of his van without reasonable suspicion. Officer Campbell stopped Mr. Booker based on Officer Presley's radio call that Mr. Booker's van may have been involved in a battery that allegedly happened at the house where he just pulled into the driveway. Now, if Officer Presley had had reasonable suspicion to stop Mr. Booker, that would have been fine, but Officer Presley did not. Officer Presley was talking to a Mr. Taiwan Tenen, who told him that his daughter had been the victim of a battery at that location when somebody pushed her down to the ground. However, his daughter, Jatoya Bailey, who was standing there, didn't confirm this, nor did she have any visible signs of injury. So there wasn't even reasonable suspicion that a battery had actually occurred. Mr. Tenen also said that he and some other relatives ran around back of the house chasing the guys that he thought were involved, and he heard a loud bang that he thought was a gunshot, but he never saw a gun, a muzzle flash, anything else that would necessarily tell him that it was a gunshot rather than a car backfiring or anything. So not much reasonable suspicion that the gun was illegally fired.
But of course, reasonable suspicion is a pretty light test, not like probable cause or beyond reasonable doubt.
That's true. And on that, it's probably a little bit closer than the battery. But even if there is reasonable suspicion that one or both of the crimes had occurred, there wasn't reasonable suspicion that Mr. Booker was involved. Mr. Tenen had said that these people that he was chasing ran off, presumably out of sight. He didn't say anything at that time about a vehicle. First time he mentioned the van was when he saw Mr. Booker driving up the street towards the house, and then he said he thought that was the van they were in. Didn't explain why he thought that. And in addition, of course, Mr. Booker was the only occupant of the van. There wasn't a whole group of people, as were allegedly involved before. And, of course, the officers couldn't see, so the description didn't make a whole lot of difference anyway. But Mr. Tenen's description, he described one individual. That wasn't really enough to go on once that person had left the scene because the description was so broad, even if Mr. Booker had matched it and the officers could have seen. The officers didn't have a right to just stop anybody who happened to pull up into the driveway where incidents allegedly occurred, but that's what they did. Therefore, this court should reverse the denial of the district court suppression motion. And even if this court does affirm Mr. Booker's conviction, the district court erroneously added four levels to his offense level based on its finding that he had committed a prior crime of violence, which in this case was involuntary manslaughter.
Can you give me an example of involuntary manslaughter that doesn't involve violence?
Well, not in the result of the crime, but we're
talking... Well, it's a conscious disregard of the risk that somebody might be killed.
That is true.
Give me an example of a conscious disregard of the fact that somebody might be seriously injured or killed that is not a crime of violence.
Waving a gun around and possibly pulling the trigger without paying a whole lot of attention to where it's pointing would certainly be that.
That would be not a crime of violence, waving a gun.
Well, there wouldn't be any intent. There wouldn't be any purposeful
intent.
If it was intended,
it'd be murder.
If there was intent to kill, it would be murder. But there wouldn't necessarily be an intent to harm anybody.
You mean if you shot into a crowd? And you...
Into a crowd, probably there would be, but.
Yeah.
In the middle of town or whatever.
Popping a shot, knowing that there's a substantial and unjustifiable risk. Now, that firing up in the air doesn't do it. Firing across the field doesn't do it.
Well, a lot of people would think that firing up in the air in the middle of town creates a substantial and unjustifiable risk.
Well, I would too, but I'm trying to give you the benefit of that. I want you to give me one example of somebody who consciously disregards a substantial and unjustifiable risk that somebody might be killed for what he's doing that is not a crime of violence.
Well, as I said, we're not talking about the result of the crime, but whether there's the purposeful, intentional desire to harm somebody that's similar to one of the listed offenses of burglary, arson, explosives, and
disregard.
For example, the only difference between involuntary manslaughter and reckless homicide in Illinois is
the
reckless homicide involves
a
vehicle, and involuntary manslaughter doesn't. So getting behind the wheel of a vehicle while drunk and killing somebody would be, except for the involvement of the vehicle, the same offense. And that's
Not quite. Because the intoxication removes the possibility of intentionally knowing that you're going to do something bad.
Well, but if it was but that's not an element of the offense. The offense only requires a mens rea of recklessness, which
for a reckless homicide.
Either one, for involuntary manslaughter as well. It requires
involuntary manslaughter involves, if I recall correctly, by definition, a conscious disregard of substantial and unjustifiable risk that the defendant acts may result in harm for the death. Am I not defining reckless homicide correctly?
Involuntary manslaughter correctly. Illinois, occurs when a person unintentionally kills an individual if his acts, whether they're lawful or unlawful, which cause the death, are performed in a reckless manner.
They don't say anything about the conscious disregard of the...
Well, that's part of the recklessness standard.
Yeah, but is that part of the statute?
It's part of the different statute which defines the term reckless.
Is it part of the statute that involves the crime of involuntary manslaughter?
No, it simply says that the acts which are must be such that they're likely to cause death or great bodily harm, and the defendant performs the acts in a reckless manner.
With a conscious disregard? Does it say that?
That is within the definition of reckless. However, this court in United States v. Smith just recently held that a crime that only requires a mens rea of recklessness does not qualify as a violent felony under the Armed Career Criminal.
This is different than a conscious disregard, but go ahead.
Well, that,
besides, you're into your rebuttal time.
Illinois requires the mens rea of recklessness and involuntary manslaughter. Some of the times when that's charged, it looks like there's more involved there, but that's the elements of the offense.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Iasfaro.
Thank you. May it please the Court. Michael Asparo on behalf of the United States. The Supreme Court in United States v. Begay held that in order to qualify as a violent felony under the otherwise or residual clause of the Armed Career Criminal Act, that the crime must typically involve purposeful, violent, and aggressive conduct.
So we have involuntary manslaughter here, and if we look at the Smith case, it was pretty clear in the language that recklessness was not enough. Our Smith case.
We think that Illinois involuntary manslaughter statute is distinguishable from Smith because Illinois courts have time and again held that recklessness requires not just an accidental or negligent or careless act. It requires something purposeful. The definition of recklessness in Illinois requires conscious disregard of a substantial and unjustifiable risk.
And here, Mr. Booker kicked and punched Mr. Lane to death.
That's right.
And how is that different from the Smith case, though? How do you distinguish it from the Smith case?
Well, the Smith case didn't get into the definition of recklessness under Indiana law. The crime was criminal recklessness. But under Illinois law, recklessness and involuntary manslaughter, recklessness in the context of involuntary manslaughter, has been interpreted to only include purposeful conduct. The statute defines recklessness as requiring a conscious disregard. And examples that Illinois courts have upheld as violations of the Illinois involuntary manslaughter statute are beatings in the Gross case, People versus Gross, shootings in the Cole and Hoover cases, and arsons. The Begay case talks about crimes that are similar in kind to the example crimes in the Armed Career Criminal Act. And for all intents and purposes, the guideline definition of crimes of violence is the same. And one of those example crimes is arson. Arson has been prosecuted when death results under the involuntary manslaughter statute in Illinois. And Illinois courts have upheld convictions in those circumstances.
Well, if the rationale behind these career offender statutes is to deter offenders who deliberately commit crimes, then how does enhancing a sentence for an involuntary manslaughter conviction, which doesn't require specific intent, square with the idea of deterrence?
Well, I don't think Begay went quite as far as requiring purposeful to mean intentional. In fact, at one point, Begay says a prior crime's relevance to the possibility of future danger with a gun, crimes involving intentional or purposeful conduct, as in burglary and arson, are different than DUI, a strict liability crime. The Supreme Court in Begay was concerned with a strict liability crime. And they use intentional or purposeful. They don't equate purposeful with intentional.
Well, doesn't Smith equate the two, though?
It does. And in that respect, it's the government's position that Smith was written a bit too broadly, particularly in the context of this involuntary manslaughter statute under Illinois law, because recklessness under Illinois law requires a conscious disregard. And in order to act consciously, you have to act purposefully. The Supreme Court didn't equate intentional with purposeful. They said intentional or purposeful. If you act with conscious disregard, if you commit an arson, or if you commit a beating, like here, hitting and kicking the victim, or if you commit a shooting, and you do that recklessly, thereby causing the death of the individual, you're purposefully acting. The death is the aggressive and violent prong of the Begay test. So we think that in the sense that Smith equated purposeful with intentional, it was written a bit too broadly.
It should have been come out the other way. Is that what you're saying? Or
we believe that it should have, yes, Judge.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at another
you think
recent...
it was wrong and the result was incorrect?
That's the government's position, Judge, yes. If you look at another recent Seventh Circuit decision, the Jennings case, which held that resisting a peace officer by operating a vehicle in a manner creating a substantial risk of injury to another by speeding and ignoring traffic control devices, that was a crime of violence under the Jennings case. It would be difficult to reconcile that as a crime of violence with involuntary manslaughter, which by definition causes the death, requires the death of an individual, here by the kicking and punching and hitting of the victim, Kenneth Lane.
Yes, of course. By definition, you don't intend to commit homicide, though, right?
That's true, but the actions that ultimately cause the death are committed in a purposeful manner with conscious disregard. Those are voluntary.
And how do you distinguish purposeful from intentional? Explain that to me.
Well, I think you can act knowingly without necessarily acting intentionally.
No, you can't. Don't quibble that way. That won't work.
The Supreme Court said intentional or purposeful without saying
that. Yeah, but I say it's a distinction without a difference. Once you decide you want to do something, and the intention is to kick, with the conscious disregard as to whether or not the end result is the death or not, and that makes it involuntary manslaughter. And that, I think the general position of the government is that's a crime of violence no matter how you slice the cheese.
That's right. We believe that involuntary manslaughter under Illinois law is categorically a crime of violence.
But you're saying that's inconsistent with the Smith case. Is that right?
Under the reading of the Smith case, yes. Arguably, if recklessness does not equate to purposeful conduct, then Smith controls, and that's the end of the game. But we believe that our circumstances are distinguishable from Smith, and that Smith was written a bit too broadly. I want to turn just briefly to the suppression issue because Mr. Anderson touched on that.
But let me go back for a minute to Jennings, because you mentioned Jennings, but that's distinguishable from our situation because there was a purposeful aggressive act on the part of the defendant in Jennings.
The acts in Jennings were speeding and disregarding traffic control devices.
That's like kicking or beating.
Well, arguably our factual circumstances are greater than speeding or disregarding traffic control devices. You're voluntarily and intentionally kicking and hitting somebody with conscious disregard for what happens. So
does it make any difference whether you're the aggressor in this battle or not, or defending yourself? Or?
Well, you may have a self-defense argument in that case, and then maybe we wouldn't be here. So,
if you had successfully argued a self-defense argument, there wouldn't have been a conviction, and that's the end of that.
Right. With respect to the suppression issue, the test is whether there was reasonable suspicion for the officers to stop that van. What they knew upon their arrival was that they were there because of a shots fired call. Officer Presley was flagged down by Taiwan Tenen, who explained to him that he had been investigating a battery that had happened to his daughter at 818 Furman in Rockford. He went down there. He encountered a group of people, saw this group of people run out the back of the house, chased them, and then heard what he believed to be a gunshot, which corroborates the shots fired call that they were there for in the first place. As Officer Presley is talking to Taiwan Tenen, Taiwan Tenen points down towards 818 Furman and says, "That's the van. I think that's the van that they were in." Officer Presley doesn't have any duty to further investigate that to definitively know that that's the van that any of the suspects were in. He simply radioed that information to the other officer on the scene, Officer Campbell, and Officer Campbell had reasonable suspicion to stop the van. It's a reasonableness test, and then the recovery of the weapon flowed from there. So we think that the district court properly denied the suppression motion and that the defendant was properly convicted. For those reasons, we ask this court to affirm the defendant's conviction and to uphold the defendant's sentence and to find that involuntary manslaughter under Illinois law is categorically a crime of violence under the guidelines.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Anderson.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. So I was paraphrasing before, so perhaps I should read the definition of involuntary manslaughter. It's a person who unintentionally kills an individual without lawful justification commits involuntary manslaughter if his acts, whether lawful or unlawful, which cause the death are such as are likely to cause death or great bodily harm to some individual, and he performs them recklessly, except in cases in which the cause of death consists of driving a motor vehicle or other vehicle. So that does not require the purposeful, violent, or aggressive conduct, which Begay said was necessary. And, in fact, the Supreme Court, as this Court noted in Smith, mentioned the federal offense of reckless tampering with a product as something that wouldn't qualify.
Reckless tampering with what?
A product. For example, adulterating
Tylenol.
Yes, that could be one. And if it results in death, that's not the same type of offense that would qualify. But that would be at least as serious as involuntary manslaughter under state law.
How about the Jennings case?
Well, the Jennings case didn't involve a crime with a mens rea of recklessness, and that's the distinction here. The court in the at least from reading the opinion, it doesn't say in there that that was an element of the offense, whereas in this case and in Smith, recklessness is an element of the offense and is required. Talk about some of the ways voluntary manslaughter can be committed without purposeful violent conduct was affirmed when somebody intentionally prevented somebody else from calling 911 and then somebody died as a result, probably wouldn't have if an emergency had been called earlier. Somebody suffocated an infant by covering its mouth, but they didn't want to kill the infant. They wanted to shut it up. Rather stupid, but they didn't kill it. Somebody left an infant in a car, and it died from being overheated. And that you know, were it not for the tragic result, wouldn't have been violent. You know, somebody could possibly be doing work on the street. They leave a manhole open. Somebody falls into it, might qualify. Typically, in years past, a lot of people, including my own grandfather, would try to teach somebody to swim by going them out, taking them out in the middle of a lake, throwing them in, and, well, they'd learn to swim.
Happened to me, and I drowned.
So yeah, well, exactly. Worked for my dad, but if somebody had drowned in the process, it would have been involuntary manslaughter. Thank you, Your Honors.
Counsel, thank you for your fine arguments this morning. We'll take them under advisement.